The following message was recorded at the 2012 No Regrets Men's Conference. More information about the No Regrets Conference is available at noregretsconference.org. Feel free to make copies of this message for others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. And now, our featured presentation.
I'm here to introduce Mike Moses with Elmbrook Church, and his education is a Bachelor's of Science in Pharmacy, Illinois, and he's got a Master's of Business Administration, Keller Graduate School. And Mike worked as a pharmacist for 36 years, 19 of those as a hospital director of pharmacy. And Mike has been a missionary with Brothers and Sisters in Christ, serving basics for 5.5 years, serving as the director of operations for the past 3.5 years. His ministry on 1, discipleship of middle and high school students in the inner city; 2, educating high school students in church groups about human trafficking; 3, administering a mentoring program for victims, survivors of human trafficking; and 4, bringing worship to incarcerated Christians in the state prisons. And Mike's been married 42.5 years with 2 grown children. And here's Mike.
Morning, brothers.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming today. This is really an important topic. It's not an edification. You know, I come to No Regrets every year. I'm highly edified by what I have to hear. And it's not the sort of thing that, you know, is going to send you away going, wow, I really feel pumped up for Jesus. And I'm sorry about that, okay? Because that's what we're all about at Basics. We're all about serving Christ. Brothers and sisters in Christ serving is acronym Basics. But, very important topic. We have an unbelievable outbreak of an evil that is just kind of beyond description. Slavery is not only alive and well today, but is thriving. And it's not only global, it's so local that we have cases in Brookfield and Oak Creek and Milwaukee. And those are just the ones that have been adjudicated that we know about, they'll talk about. And we have many more that are pending in our federal court building in Milwaukee. This is the fastest growing criminal endeavor of all crime. There's more people that are enslaved today than have ever been enslaved in history. Most of the documentation says 27 million people worldwide are enslaved. Now, to give you some historical perspective, in the days of the slave trade, when people were being kidnapped out of Africa and taken to the West Indies and to the colonies and elsewhere, that was over parts of 4 different centuries. They think that there were 13 million people that were enslaved. Today, most will say 27 million. Others will say there's so much going on in India, where they have over a billion people, that they may have that many right there alone. And part of it is probably the way it's defined. It is not only the fastest growing, but it is second in dollar volume only to drug trafficking. So think about, you know, drug trafficking. We, at this point, there can't be anybody in Western culture that's not aware how big a deal drug trafficking is in the world and in the United States, and the billions and billions of dollars that are being spent on drugs. This is second only to drug trafficking in terms of dollar volume. And my detective colleagues say, they argue that. They think because with a kilo of whatever, let's say a kilo of coke, you have to buy the coke, sell the coke, and then go back and buy some more coke before you can sell it again. But with a slave, however you've accomplished in enslaving that person, oftentimes kidnapping, you have that person and you sell them over and over and over and over again. And you don't have to replace the stock until you've worn that slave out. Why this is important is because it's not just African-American kids from the hood. It's your daughters and granddaughters and nieces as well, and mine. This is happening all over the United States. It's happening in every city. It's happening in most every suburb. And it's even happening in small towns. There are 200 to 300,000 American kids who are enslaved as I talk to you. The most conservative estimate I've seen is 100,000. And almost all the authorities say 200 to 300,000 of American kids enslaved in America as I talk to you. Tomorrow is Super Bowl Sunday, as we heard from Tony. And, you know, as we didn't have to get reminded, I'm sure. That is the biggest day of the year for human trafficking in the United States every year. The biggest day for human trafficking every day is Super Bowl Sunday, because there's going to be tens of thousands of guys going to that game in Indianapolis tomorrow and wherever they were last year, because I can never remember anymore. Wherever they are, the folks who are trafficking humans bring them in to service those men.
Can I just ask a question?
Actually, I'd ask you to hold all your questions to the end, okay? Thank you. So, this is big, big business. We're talking about billions and billions of dollars, talking about, you know, second only to drugs and maybe even bigger than that, which makes it awfully dangerous. And it's happening to everybody. It's happening to white girls. It's happening to black girls. It's happening to boys. It's happening to men. It's happening to women. And it's happening to poor people. And it's happening to affluent people, children of affluent people, usually. It's two forms of slavery. One is forced labor. And in the United States, you most often see that as people in sweatshops, people in farm fields, people in kitchens of restaurants, people in hotel cleanup crews. And as Kevin Bale says in his book, The Slave Next Door, lots and lots of people, like the woman who was here in Brookfield, enslaved for 19 years in a doctor's home, is an individual who's in some individual or couple's home serving them and enslaved. Now, most people, as I tell that story, they remember the case because it's only a few years old, about this Filipino woman who was enslaved here in Brookfield. But they don't put it together with slavery. I mean, the reason why we're doing this for three reasons, okay? First and foremost is to increase awareness, because I still get the question, that's happening here and that's happening now, and the answer is always yes. It's happening right here. It happened right here in Brookfield that we know about, that got adjudicated. The second reason why we're doing it is, and my greatest prayer is that because I'm making presentations, others are making presentations to increase awareness, that more of these slaves will be rescued. And not only will they be rescued from horrible indignities, but for many of them, it'll be risking their lives, because many of these people will end up dead. And the third reason why we do this is, as I speak in high schools all over the city, I'm speaking to the students. I'm speaking to those who are really the targets. And I'm trying to warn them about who they hang out with and from whom they might accept something to drink. But as I talk to church groups, I'm talking about your daughters. Talking about your granddaughters. I have two girls. Okay, they're both grown women now. I think they're out of the target age. But I'm very impassioned about the fact that this could be my own daughter, that this could happen to. And I'm going to show you a DVD this morning that's going to include a case of this young woman who is a white woman from a small town who got enslaved. So anyway, I talked about forced labor, and I talked about it here in the United States. In places like India, it looks a little different. They have the brick kilns where they harden the bricks, where they're making bricks for construction. And that's one of the biggest areas of people being enslaved. And sometimes it's from generation to generation. Somebody gets in debt, and then, you know, they're never able to pay off their debt, and even their son now becomes, you know, the one who's paying off their debt. In Sri Lanka, there's boys being sold for sex. And so let me get to the other piece. 20% of slavery today is forced labor, but 80% of slavery today is sexual exploitation. And we're talking about prostitution, pornography, and stripping, and often all three of them. Now, the case I like to talk about here from the north side of Milwaukee, which was just adjudicated summer before last. Guy called himself King Tut. He was in the news. I wrote an article on slavery, and I talk about him a little bit. But he had 9 girls and women in his stable. He was a pimp. And 6 of them were underage. And the very first high school that I went into to talk about this issue, the cops that I roll with, who helped me to get to see the principal so I can get an audience with the principal, told me the story of this guy and his son. He had a son going to school in that school, and he was using his son to recruit girls, okay, into his stable. Now, first of all, let me remind you that if a woman or a girl is under the age of 18 and they're in any of the sex trades, they're considered a victim of trafficking. So no matter how they got there, whether they were kidnapped or whether they were cajoled, they've been exploited. And one of the things that they don't know, as the cops told me, they talked to these girls and they said, well, we're going to do it anyway. We may as well get paid for it. I don't know if these were the girls who were drawn in or just girls from the school. And I said, we're talking about 16, 17-year-old girls? He said, no, 13 or 14-year-old girls. And what they don't know, there's another piece that I use, and if we have time today, I'll use it. It's a 5-minute piece. It's a woman who's been through this stuff and goes through this litany. She was, you know, wooed in to by this sharp-talking guy. You know, most of these kids are fatherless. I do discipleship in the hood, and they say that 70% of all the kids on the north side are without a father in the home. And I can tell you from my experience of the last 4.5 years, the kids I've worked with, it's 98%. I think I've had 2 fathers in the home of all these kids that I work with. So they don't have fathers. They're looking for love in the wrong place sometimes. And so they get wooed in. But when they get wooed in, you know, they're not this guy's, you know, he's not their sugar daddy. He's not their lover. He's their pimp. And he's their slave master. Okay? They give all the money to him and all the things that happen to them. So two forms of slavery. And it's happening right in our backyard. You know, when I came in this morning to check on the DVD player, it wasn't quite so sunny. This may not be really easy to see in a room like this today, but you'll be able to hear it. And I'd like you to listen to some cases of trafficking, people telling their own story. Now, some of this comes from the government, and some of it comes from MSNBC, which has done a much better job of focusing on the fact that this is happening to our own kids. And when we get done here, then I will take some questions after we kind of wrap up the story. So let me run this for you. And please let me know if you can hear all the way in the back, okay? Thank you. just the foreign-born.
The abuse, it was horrendous. I was tortured. I never thought a human being would go through what I went through and live.
By this woman, we'll call her Sarah. The suffering began when she was kidnapped in her early teens. Forced to engage in stripping and prostitution, Sarah endured horrific physical and mental abuse.
Having gasoline poured on me. While they held the match. Being kicked and stomped on, being drugged by my hair. Having 15 guys circle me and stomp me. And I mean literally stomp me.
As traffickers moved her from city to city, town to town, fear, not shackles, kept Sarah from breaking free.
Fear of my family being harmed, fear of myself being harmed or killed, believing that my traffickers would carry out what they said they would do, fear of no one believing me. Going to the police was not an option at the time, so I thought I was brainwashed to believe that no one would help me. If anything, it would put me in more danger or even put me in jail.
Sarah's story is tragically typical for many victims of human trafficking, a modern-day form of slavery happening in the U.S., which forces tens of thousands of women, children, and men into brutal conditions for little or no pay. Many are forced into commercial sex. Others end up working in hotels and restaurants as domestic servants, on farms or in sweatshops. Esmeralda, a name we gave her, was just 11 years old when her mother in Guatemala sold her to a Guatemalan man who turned her into his sex slave. Smuggled into the United States, she endured long days of cooking, cleaning, and childcare, and nights of repeated rapes and brutality.
He told me that he paid money for me and that he can do whatever he wants with me. In that room where I used to sleep, he used to hit me, like, you know, I used to bleed and everything because we have a carpet in the room. It was blood everywhere.
While traffickers find some victims in the U.S., often their targets, like Esmeralda, come from other parts of the world. Latin America, Africa, the former Soviet Union, and Southeast Asia.
It's important to realize that although people might have been brought here willingly, when they do arrive to the United States, that they're put in positions that they had no idea they would be placed in. They're either forced into prostitution or some type of slave labor. It's important that we look at them as victims and not as criminals.
Jail could be better because, you know, people will fit. They will fit you and they know that you're there. But that house, nobody know that I was there. I was locked down, I won't do nothing. It's like, I'm not there.
Traffickers rely on brutal tactics, emotional and physical bondage, to enslave their victims.
He told me if somebody asks you if I'm your husband, just tell him I'm your brother or something. You better not say anything. If you say something, I'm gonna kill you. That was he told me. He used to get a knife and put it in my neck over here, so he was gonna kill me.
Traffickers use a variety of methods to keep their victims enslaved. We've seen everything from force, fraud, or coercion, ranging from physical beatings and torture to psychological intimidation or threats to their family members back in their home country.
Human trafficking occurs across the U.S. in big cities, small towns, and rural areas.
It's just minutes before sunset in downtown Oakland. Young, underage girls, some as young as 12, who have been trafficked and turned out to service everyday Johns looking for cheap sex.
We don't want to do this. We are forced to do this. It's the fear they put in you. The pimp, he puts fear in you.
At 15, the man she thought was her boyfriend tortured and beat her into working 15-hour days servicing Johns both from the internet and on the street for thousands of dollars in cash.
Pimps never let you leave their site. You're always on lockdown. They're always there watching you. And if they're not watching you, their friends are watching you. You can never escape.
It's unlikely that victims will be found and rescued in significant numbers until the American public gains a much greater awareness of the horror of human trafficking. That's the goal of Rescue and Restore, a major public awareness effort launched by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to identify and assist the victims of human trafficking.
There's really only one measure of success for this program, and that's increasing the number of victims that we find and that we provide services to.
The Rescue and Restore campaign reaches out to people on the front lines, those who have the best chance of coming into contact with victims, like faith-based communities, social service providers, health workers, and law enforcement officers.
Victims don't come forward because they're afraid. But another reason they don't come forward is because the victimizers tell them if they do, they're going to be arrested, jailed, and perhaps deported. And so the victims themselves are afraid to come forward. And part of what this campaign is designed to do is to reassure them that if they do, they will not be treated as lawbreakers, but rather as victims.
By watching out for signs of human trafficking, local organizations and service providers are helping to identify and rescue victims. Given Kachepa was just 11 years old when he was brought to the United States. He was an orphan living in crushing poverty in Zambia when a U.S.-based trafficker promised him an education, free clothes, and the chance to earn money to build schools back home. All by singing in this boys' choir in churches across the U.S. But once here, Given recognized none of it was true, yet he couldn't just walk away.
Just the mind games were the biggest things and the threats, and that, you know, if you run away or if you call the police or the INS or the U.S. government, anybody you inform, they're not going to have any interest in you. They're just going to send you back. What good do you have to them?
Members of the Colleyville Baptist Church in Texas began to suspect that something wasn't right with the Zambian choir and came to the boys' rescue. You may come into contact with victims of human trafficking and not know it. So Rescue and Restore urges you to look beneath the surface and pay attention to clues.
There are a number of clues to identify a victim of human trafficking. Typically, we'll look for a lack of proper documentation or maybe a well-rehearsed story that had been given to them by the trafficker. We'll also look for physical signs of abuse. And you might also find in the victim intense fear and depression.
Evidence of being controlled is another important clue. Knowing what questions to ask can help uncover victims of trafficking. Questions like, are you being paid? Have you been threatened? Where do you eat and sleep? And can you leave your job if you want to?
I was not free to move in and out of the factory ground as I wished. I was forced to live in a very unclean housing and to eat ugly food.
Asking the right questions helped free Hao Trin from the unthinkable abuse she suffered as a garment worker.
They don't have food for us to eat. And in a small room with so many people inside, we have no electric fan and too hot in the daytime.
If you've met someone like Hao, Sarah, Esmeralda, or Given, who you think might be enslaved, take action. You may be the only outsider with a chance to speak to the victim. Contact the police if you suspect the victim is in imminent danger. Either way, call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center to activate local on-the-ground support for the victim. The Resource Center is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with operators who can immediately connect victims to community groups that can help. The HHS Rescue and Restore campaign has set up a safety net of organizations across the country to help identify, rescue, and provide social services to trafficking victims. It's a modern-day underground railroad to help victims on the road to freedom.
It's a story that begins in small-town USA with the girl next door.
I always figured that something like that could never happen to me because I was safe.
I was always careful.
At 16, Shauna Newell had heard the stories of the thousands of young foreign women being tricked into modern-day sexual slavery.
I always thought that stuff like that only happened to people who were, like, putting themselves in that position, in that predicament, you know, like girls who were floozies and girls who just took life for granted, and I wasn't that kind of person, you know. I dressed respectably. I never showed my body off ever.
But this Florida teenager's life took a terrifying turn when she was trafficked by the most unlikely criminal, a fellow 16-year-old girl.
I was such a trusting teenager. Like, I thought that everybody liked me and everybody wanted to be my friend and nobody would hurt me.
200,000 to 300,000 of our children are at risk of it every single year. Our children, United States citizens.
Brad Dennis runs Rescue and Recovery for Class Kids, the national organization dedicated to saving missing children. He says Shauna's case illustrates the alarming growth of the disappearance of American kids. An estimated 300,000 who are forced into prostitution in the U.S. each year.
It's happening in every major town, every little suburban area, every rural area. It's happening all over the United States.
It happened when Shauna began an innocent friendship with a new girl junior year in high school.
Is a girl I went to school with. I met her through GED classes, and she was a really good friend.
Shauna says that girl, a 16-year-old who we'll call Kathy, worked hard to gain Shauna's trust, and within months, a deep friendship was born.
We would always talk in class, and I would always tell her, yeah, me and my mom were arguing again. Of course, I was like, oh, well, my parents aren't controlling. You can come over to my house, and we can do whatever we want to do. You know, we can, you want to go out and drink? We can go out and drink. My grandpa even let us borrow the car.
She spent weeks lobbying her mother for permission to spend the night at Kathy's house. Lisa, a registered nurse, returned from work to an immaculate house.
I said, Shauna, what do you want? I want to talk to you. And I said, okay. And she said, before you say no, listen to me. And I said, okay. She said, she wants me to come spend the weekend with her to go help clean condos with her dad. And I said, Shauna, I'm not going to discuss that now. And she said, well, can she at least come home and her dad meet you? And at least you can meet him? I said, well, we can at least do that. But I'm still telling you, you know, I'm not going to let you go still yet, Shauna.
Later that night, Kathy and her dad came over to the house to meet Shauna's mother and grandmother.
He was slick. He was like, yeah, the girls are going to go clean condos, and they'll make like $80 a piece, and I'll make sure she calls you, and, you know, you can come out there anytime. And Shauna's just begging me, begging me, begging me, so I finally give in.
Kathy's dad took the two girls to a friend's house not far from where Shauna lived.
Her dad took us to this house and said he'd be right back, and he left us there, and probably about 20 or 30 minutes after we were there, I asked for some water because I was thirsty, and I drank the water and I blacked out.
When Shauna woke up, she felt groggy and couldn't move.
My legs were being held down. The guy that was raping me was holding my hands back, and I was completely naked, and it was really cold in the room, so I knew I was completely naked. And like, I kept screaming, stop, please don't do this, leave me alone. But I was so weak, I couldn't fight him off. Like, I was still really out of it. And I blacked out a few times, and I kept coming back to, and I was still being raped every time I woke up.
For 3 days, Shauna was raped by multiple men who paid to have sex with her. Some of the men beat her, others bit her, and forced her to perform oral sex. While her frantic family called police, a beaten and bleeding Shauna could see her so-called friend walking back and forth through the hallway.
I was so exhausted, and I was so scared that I finally just said, well, I guess this is where I'm gonna die. And I remember just praying and saying, if I die here, just at least please, please tell my family that, you know, that I love them and that I'm sorry that I disobeyed them.
Shauna endured 3 days of being drugged, raped, and tortured. And according to rescuers,
Shauna had been sold on the internet for $300,000.
According to hospital records, a lethal combination of cocaine, meth, ecstasy, and GHB, the rape drug, were pumped out of the 16-year-old's system.
I was thinking the whole time, she's right. If I would have just listened to her, I wouldn't be here right now. I would be at home. I would be at home with my brothers and I miss them so much. I miss all my brothers so much.
Today, under the watchful guard of her family, Shauna warns other girls about how easy it is to be kidnapped and trafficked. Her mission? To save other girls from a similar fate.
The goal of the Rescue and Restore program is to assist victims on their road to recovery. We have a national network of social service providers who stand ready to provide victims with
I'm going to stop that there. Shauna's case is an interesting one, first of all, because it's a different way that she got enslaved. It was her friend who drugged her. And we know that on campuses, guys using drugs to perform date rape on their dates happens quite frequently. And so that's part of that warning. But there's a takeaway here, okay? The first and foremost takeaway is that there's something that someone can actually do. You can make a phone call. You know, that's a 24/7 hotline that they have professionals taking the calls and deducing what's going on. And even if you're wrong, there's no penalty for that. And what they do, if you were to call from here, they would call back to this area. They would talk to the task force here in Milwaukee in southeast Wisconsin and talk to the folks there for them to go out and do the investigation and rescue. That task force is made up of the FBI, the Milwaukee Police Department, the ICE, the immigration folks, the Department of Labor, IRS, and U.S. Attorney's Office. And this is a reminder, as I think about her story, that was a one-hour documentary. You know, what happened with her is that, you know, she gets rescued because the victimizers have learned that if they move their victims often and after short periods of time, you know, if they're in a place a short period of time, they're a lot less likely to get caught. And so after 3 days, they were taking her, you know, more than likely, I would suspect, to the guy who offered $300,000 to pay for Shauna. But either that or on to the next city for this to happen, you know, over and over again, which is what usually happens. And they stopped for gas locally, and her brother was there. You know, they were out looking for her, and her brother, they don't tell us the details of how her brother was able to rescue her. You look at the picture of her brother, he looks like he's about 19 and skinny. He looks about as imposing in his youth as I do in my old age, but he comes away with his sister. She is so impaired. Now, remember, they talked about a lethal dose of these four drugs. GHB is a muscle relaxant that, you know, they use in the hospital. And you can't even move your arms and legs, you know, depending on the dose. And, of course, ecstasy, cocaine, methamphetamine, they all affect you mentally. So she was in and out of being, you know, conscious while she was there. And then even when she was conscious, she still was not really coherent. And so when they got her, they took her to the emergency department. And she was not really able to cooperate because of being so messed up. And so they treated her more like a drug overdose than they did as a victim of this crime. It's kind of an aside. But while she was in the hospital, she coded twice. You know, she came this close to dying two times while she was in the hospital. I think she's some sort of a heroine to go on, you know, national and international news with her face, her name, and her story, because she doesn't want it to happen to somebody else. And that's part of the reason why I'm doing this, is so that we want to make sure that this doesn't happen to somebody else, but also that there's this phone number that you can call if you thought that somebody was in trouble and talk to somebody. And I just want to read to you, that has quite a bit to say about slavery, about people who are being held against their will in many different places, especially Isaiah. But this is from Proverbs. And in Proverbs 24:11, he says, "Rescue those being led away to death. Hold back those staggering towards slaughter. If you say, 'But we knew nothing about this,' does not he who weighs the heart perceive it? Does not he who guards your life know it? Will he not repay each person according to what he has done?" This is a call to action. Okay, I'm calling you to action to be more aware of the fact that this is happening right now, and it's happening in our backyards. It's a call to action that God calls us to be part of the solution. and not be part of the problem. And when I say not be part of the problem, that means that if someone looks at pornography, they may very well be supporting slave trade. And if someone goes to a strip joint, they may very well be supporting slavery. And if someone visits a prostitute, they may very well be supporting slavery. You know, the task force people that I work with closely tell me that as they go to conferences around the country, their colleagues say, all roads lead back to Milwaukee. You know, in Nevada, there's legal prostitution, and so there's a lot of enslaved girls being taken to Nevada to be abused in slavery there as prostitutes, just like they're being taken tomorrow to Indianapolis for the Super Bowl. So a call to action, call to awareness, and a call to just be thinking about it differently. This is really, really is happening. And it really is happening all over here in the Milwaukee area, as well as globally and throughout this nation. Okay, I'll be glad to take your question now if we haven't already answered it.
You did answer, but now I just... do you want to give us that number
that
was on there?
It's 888. And by the way, I do have some brochures that we're going to try to get out. Maybe if you could, Doug, maybe put that on a chair over there as people leave. It's got the number in. It's also got the website in it. But it's 888-3737-888. And just, you know, an aside, they set it up the number that way as opposed to the way you normally look at a number with, you know, three, four numbers because, well, a girl could write it down and it, it doesn't look like a phone number. I mean, surely by now all the people who are enslaving them know that too. But part of the reason why they did it that way was to make it look less like a phone number and easy to remember. I mean, even I can remember that number, and I'm getting pretty senile. So, okay. Other questions? Yes, sir.
Given the severity of effect that this has, although calling the number is, you know, an action that needs to be taken and something that is people are aware of is more than normal, but it seems like a rather passive situation, a passive action for given what it is.
Okay, fair enough. And first of all, let me just remind you, billions of dollars in business. The Oakland girl and her story was also a one-hour story of Oakland stuff. She says every one of these guys carries a gun. They usually have one on them and one in the car, too. It's very dangerous. The other piece is the Shauna story. The guys from Class Kids, this is what they do. Some of you may recall that Polly Class was a little girl who got kidnapped and murdered in California several years ago, and they formed this organization to try to help missing children. And so this Class Kids guy was able to figure out, I mean, this is what they do, he was able to figure out where she was, because remember, the police don't consider you missing for 72 hours in most cities of the United States. You're not officially missing for 72 hours. I'm told by my colleagues here that's not true in Milwaukee. It's more like 24 hours, but 72 hours almost everywhere else in the country. So she's not missing yet, officially. I mean, she wasn't missing until she was found, okay, officially. Her stepdad went to try to rescue her. He got beaten so severely out on the front lawn that neighbors up and down the street were calling 911 saying, please send the police. So, you know, this is for the authorities to do the rescue piece. Now, ministries of different sorts are getting involved in the restoration piece. And actually, my colleagues told me a year ago, at that point, that was new news to me, that we've got 6 per month who are, on average, being rescued right here in the Milwaukee area. Okay, who are being rescued. Okay, remember, that's the tip of the iceberg. Those are the ones being rescued. And that their two greatest needs are housing and basic life skills mentoring. Okay, well, housing takes all sorts of resources. Not only, you know, the money to buy a place and pay for the taxes and keep it heated and all that, but also have staff there 24/7. Well, we don't have that kind of organization. We don't have that kind of money. But I'm already doing discipleship with kids in the hood, and I already have people who are volunteering to help me with that. know, I'm already vetting those people to do that. So I said to my colleague, the detective, I said, nobody's doing that here. We need to do something. And so we've started a ministry of mentoring to these victim survivors. Now, it's new. It's kind of a pilot program. The first two out of the gate, one was black and one was white. So, I mean, I'm just, you know, that's only two, but 50% were white, okay? I mean, we're not talking about all black girls, okay? We're not talking about all, you know, minorities. We're talking about people of every race and of every, you know, nationality. And we're mentoring them, and I've also now got a psychologist who's helping us with that. So I saw a hand up somewhere. Yes?
I was just going to say, you know, their number 80-20 is pretty staggering, but, you know, in some countries, you know, there's state-sponsored slavery, you know, and where people are incarcerated for various reasons, like in China, and all your Christmas tree lights are made by people, basically, they're in slave labor. In Dane County, where I'm from, we have over 20,000 people whose first language is Spanish. And I don't think that the cows speak anything except Spanish and Russian on our farms. And they are not being paid, you know, suitable wages, and they're not documented. And, you know, whatever your politics on undocumented aliens is fine. But what it does is a coyote brings somebody across the border into the U.S. They charge them $10,000. They give them a valid social security number. They bring them to Madison, and they spend the next 3, 4, 5 years paying the $10,000 off to the coyote. In some ways, they're still a slave, because what if they say, oh, I don't want to pay? Well, that's not...
Those end up, in some of those cases, those end up being slave cases. But, you know, we're not going to try to get into, you know, prostitution and all sorts of different areas. We're talking about people who are enslaved, okay? Some of those may end up being that in that situation. Some people are just underpaid, okay? A lot of people were underpaid. Okay, yes?
If I'm a high school teacher, if I wanted to approach my principal about seeing how I can get an assembly about this topic, what's the best avenue to go about as far as who would I contact first? Should I call the number?
Okay, so you mean to have a presentation?
Have a presentation.
Okay, well, you could contact me.
Okay.
My email address is mike@basics, B-A-S-I-C-S. INMKE, basicsinmilwaukee.org. And I know there's a crew of us from the Rescue and Restore who do presentations. But to get your principal to buy in, your principal would probably have to hear, you know, directly from the horse's mouth. I mean, that's been my experience with, you know, the public schools in Milwaukee.
Is that DVD available as far as that?
The 12-minute piece from the government is available from the government. It's free.
Okay.
If they still have it in stock.
Okay. And could you say your email one more time, Mike, at what?
Basics, BASICSINMKE.org. Other questions? Yes, sir.
What percentage of teenagers that are taken in the U.S. kids stay in the U.S. versus going to New York?
The vast majority. You know, when they say there's 200,000 to 300,000 American kids who were enslaved, we're talking about most of them are enslaved here. Some of them, you know, a lot of you have probably seen the movie Taken with Liam Neeson, okay, where, you know, his daughter goes off to France and, you know, she gets kidnapped and she gets purchased by a sheik, okay, he spends, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars for her. That probably happens. I don't know any of those cases, okay? But the vast majority of them are right here in the United States, okay? And a lot of them will probably be in Indianapolis tomorrow, okay? I mean, you know, certainly not any big percentage of them, but a lot of women will probably be in Indianapolis being enslaved.
What about, estimates on what percentage of prostitutes are trafficked?
I do not. I can tell you that they estimate that there are 150. They estimate there's 450,000 runaways every year in the United States. This is a huge number, and they think probably up to 150,000 of them are part of that 200,000 to 300,000 that get enslaved in the United States. So, you know, they make up a big chunk of it. But, you know, the point being is that, you know, they get kidnapped. I mean, our very first victim survivor was kidnapped, and that's what happened to her. And she was enslaved for a year. So they can get kidnapped, they get, you know, exploited, they get, you know, they run away and they get exploited and then they get enslaved in all sorts of ways. But how many are this or that? We don't know. Other questions? Yes, sir.
Are there areas in the country that are worse than others?
Well, it's happening all over the United States in cities and suburbs. Probably it's worse in bigger cities. I've two really good books on the topic, Not For Sale by Jeff Fatstone and The Slave Next Door by Kevin Bales. Real good information on that. Also, if you took a brochure, if you go to the website, you can get quite a bit of information from the website. But again, the government website is really focused on foreign-born people as opposed to the locals, you know, the nationals here. So don't have specifics. And you know, a lot of this is estimates. But, you know, where they say that they think that someone is taken every minute, the authorities worldwide estimate it's every 8 seconds somebody's bought, sold, or taken, and every 20 seconds it's somebody under the age of 18. And 50% are children. Other questions? Yes, sir.
If a person is brought in from outside of the United States as placed on from MAR rescue, are they sent back then to where they were, or are they given citizenship?
That's part of what they were trying to portray in that HHS DVD. They've got a new law. Well, it's not new anymore. They've passed a law this decade, and it's they can get a T visa. It's a special visa for someone who's been in a situation like that, and they can stay longer in the country. Some of them actually, you know, get to become citizens. So this guy, Gibbon, you know, you can see he was taken when he was 11. He looks like he's probably in his 20s now. I know it's been several years. I read the story somewhere. I think it might have been in Bale's book. And so he's still in the United States. So some of them become citizens, and some are able to, but they get a special dispensation because of what's happened to them in a special visa. Any other questions? Well, I gave you 3 minutes to go have lunch, I guess, or something. Thanks for coming, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.